Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Finlandia University has a series called Campus Read, and I have Dr. Carolyn Decker, who is here from Finlandia, to talk about it, and also their guest that has been visiting the campus this month, Lindsay King Miller, who is the author of Ask a Queer Chick. I'm going to have her talk about that book and topics related to it. First of all, let me say hello to Dr. Carolyn and Lindsay. Thanks for coming and joining me on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Dr. Decker, just call you Carolyn, is that okay?
That sounds good.
Okay. Let's start with you a little bit with about what Campus Read is. This is a program that's run through Finlandia, and you have special guests throughout the year.
Well, we're able to have usually one special guest per year. We'll choose an author to encourage faculty members to use throughout the kind of curriculum across the campus, and students to read, in some cases on their own, in some cases for classroom assignments. And then it culminates in bringing that author to us to actually address our students. And our students always love to get the chance to meet the person who's behind some of the work that they've been engaging with. In the case of Lindsay's visit, we're amazingly excited that her work has been featured in philosophy classes, English classes, health sciences classes, and art and design classes. So there's a lot of interest across campus in her visit.
What is the process for selecting, you know, what the topic will be for that year, or the author of that for that year?
In some cases, we are actually approached by authors. And there's a committee that decides. In this case, it was Dr. Monique Bordage, our former professor of communication, who brought Lindsay's work to our attention. And, you know, the committee just thought that Lindsay's visit could mean a lot, especially to our queer students on campus, who really love the chance to engage with work that addresses some of their needs and concerns.
A topic like this that, you know, it obviously not going to apply to everybody in the student body, but then so how is it beneficial for the entire student body to learn about this topic?
Lindsay is going to talk more about this in just a moment, but in just a few hours, she's going to be addressing all of our senior nursing students about some of the needs that queer families have in healthcare. So any student who walks out of our nursing program and someday treats a queer patient, which will be all of them, you know, will benefit from getting the chance to hear from Lindsay. And, you know, this is true. Our students who may not be queer themselves have, in some cases, siblings or friends or classmates. And, you know, Lindsay's work, of course, is also really broadly applicable to the human experience. She read an incredible essay last night on dealing with anxiety after suffering the grief of a best friend's death. She also spoke incredibly movingly about what it means to her to be married. And these are the kind of deep heart concerns that matter a lot to everyone. And so that's something that's to learn to be articulate about the deepest and most important experiences of our lives. Anyone who cares about writing or living or having a heartbeat and sharing it in the world is going to find her work applicable.
Right. You're going to make me cry.
Lindsay, let's go ahead and start talking, and hopefully we can stop you from crying. You know, what Carolyn had just talked about, I think, is so key in that there are conversations that are difficult for, you know, the average person just to talk about. Mm-hmm. But it is the talking about it and normalizing those conversations and making mm-hmm. people think of situations like what she brought up, you know, for what nursing students, you know, may experience mm-hmm. just in the goings of their careers. And that does make it applicable to their lives, even if, you know, it's not something that personally they feel with. Mm-hmm.
I also think, and actually Dr. Decker and I were talking about this a little bit over breakfast, there's a way in which LGBTQ people are talking about relationships, about sex and love and dating and breakups on a more fundamental, almost mechanical level than a lot of other people are doing. And I think there is so much mythologizing culturally around what a relationship is. How do you know if someone likes you? How do you start a relationship? How do you tell someone that you love them? How do you end a relationship? And a lot of our ideas about what that should look like come from movies and TV shows and romance novels and, you know, perfume commercials, and it's this very it's this mysticized version of human relationships where everything is supposed to kind of be communicated non-verbally, and you're supposed to look into somebody's eyes and just know that you're meant to be together, and you're supposed to know what the other person wants without them saying it. And all of that narrative, I think, is kind of unrealistic and can even really be harmful. And so we talk a lot about representation in the queer community and how we don't see our relationships and our lives on TV and in books and things like that. But I think there's a way in which that's actually beneficial, because we don't have as much opportunity to internalize all of these assumptions about how relationships should unfold. So some of the basic relationship skills that LGBTQ people have to talk about, because we don't have a cultural script for how do you ask someone out? How do you know if you're attracted to someone? How do you identify that feeling? How do you know if it's time to end a relationship? You know, we're talking about these things in more fundamental and open ways in some cases. I mean, obviously I'm painting with a broad brush here, but we're talking about these things on a basic social skills level because we don't have as many of the built-in assumptions. And I think talking about it without those assumptions can actually be hugely helpful to anybody who wants to, you know, have relationships and be a person. So I think that a lot of the stuff that I talk about it in the context of queer people and same-sex relationships and, you know, my wonderful, strange little family. But it's also applicable to kind of anybody, to straight people, to cis people, just to anyone who is interested in communicating about their needs and wants and cares with more intentionality and openness.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, just sitting here across from you, you seem like, you know, very confident and very outgoing person. You're, of course, you have to be to, you know, take the stage with these topics. And, you know, so I, you know, commend you on that. But, you know, it's a tough journey. And at some point you decided to pick up a torch, you know, put yourself out there in print on these topics, which, you know, this is a whole nother step for anybody that's ever written anything. So, you know, what motivates you? What drives you? And what led you to this?
I started writing an advice column. My book sprang from the advice column, which is also called Ask a Queer Chick. And mostly I wanted to start writing an advice column because I was in grad school and trying to put off doing my homework, to be honest. And that was in 2011. But I started getting so many questions. I didn't really expect it to take off in the way that it did, but I got so many questions from people, not only from LGBTQ people who wanted advice about coming out and dating and how do I know if the girl that I like is gay, that sort of stuff, but also from straight people who were saying, how do I support my gay sister? I think that somebody I love might be trans, but they haven't told me yet. How can I ask politely? How can I support my friend who's being discriminated against at work, all of those kinds of things. People had a lot of questions. And I realized that there wasn't a ton of resources available for people to talk about things like this. And I'm not an expert on anything at all. I mean, I kind of still find it hilarious that people write to me for dating advice because I've been with the same person since I was 22 years old. So I don't know anything about dating. But I think people just want somebody to talk to and listen to them and care about what they're going through. Without trying to push what they're going through into, as I said before, those sort of prepackaged, straight, you know, romantic and sexual narratives.
Well, just as I mentioned a few moments ago, just the ability to begin having these conversations more openly, I think, is a big step. I'm in my 40s and in my you know, I just came from a family where this was a taboo subject, mm-hmm. you know, and it was not discussed, certainly not in any kind of positive light. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was an adult when I began to, I guess, diversify in my relationships and friendships that I began to have an opportunity to be exposed to people who did not grow up in the same way that mm-hmm. I did. And even, you know, even with myself, and I think I have the advantage that, like, through this show and through different career avenues I've taken, I've been able to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. But it's still not easy. On this show here a few years ago, we had a group of students from Keweenaw Pride. In fact, I've had mm-hmm. them on a few times. I had some transgender students that were mm-hmm. here shortly after, you know, a local transgender individual committed suicide. And it was like, well, we need to talk about this. Yeah. We need to get these conversations going. Mm-hmm. And, if you're in the position where you don't really understand, you know, because it's not your lifestyle, mm-hmm. well, that's an indication, well, learn. You mm-hmm. know, and if it doesn't change your opinion, well, fine. You know, if you feel mm-hmm. grounded in your opinion, but make sure it's an informed opinion. Mm-hmm. And I found that having this conversation, like what we're doing now, was difficult for me just to even ask questions because I didn't know mm-hmm. the verbiage. I didn't know if I was going to, you know, sound like, you know, some idiot. You know, I didn't, you know, certainly didn't want to say anything that was, let's say, accidentally bigoted because mm-hmm. it's just something I didn't know. Right. You know. And it was through those conversations that helped me. Like mm-hmm. Carolyn had, when you were talking, you said the word queer. Of course, Ask a Queer Chick's in there. But it was on because it was in that same group of Keweenaw Pride that they had brought up about the word queer. And I said, wait a minute, I heard, you know, isn't that a bad word? Are we not, mm-hmm. you know? They said, no, we've taken that word back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's... Of course, if you're using it in the wrong way, it's not right. a good thing. But
anything can be an insult if you mean it as an insult, right?
And I think as you've talked about in the wonderful section on language in your book, Ask a Queer Chick, some of this is generational too. Mm-hmm. There are older members of the gay lesbian community that still don't feel like they've taken that word back. So it makes perfect sense that you would sort of brace up when you've heard it, mm-hmm. kind of generationally speaking.
Yeah. And I think that the most important thing is to be willing to ask those questions and listen to the answers and to understand that they're not going to be the same for everybody. You know, the language that I use to describe myself might not be the language that somebody else uses to describe their experience and their family. And that doesn't mean that either of us is wrong. I got a question last night, and I hope it's okay for me to kind of repeat this part of the conversation because I just think it's so important. One of the things that I've written about a lot is the birth of my daughter. My partner gave birth to our amazing, brilliant, wonderful little girl just shy of 3 years ago. Her birthday's coming up. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And so it was kind of a challenge for us to find healthcare, both when we were trying to get pregnant and then when my partner was actually pregnant, that understood and was respectful to our family. My partner identifies as genderqueer. He doesn't identify as a man or a woman. He gave birth to our daughter. Our daughter calls him Dad. And that was very difficult for a lot of people to kind of wrap their minds around, the idea of giving medical care to a pregnant person without referring to that person as mama or mommy is very new to a lot of people. And so somebody asked me yesterday at my reading, how did we find a midwife who understood and was affirming to our family? And my answer was that we didn't find a midwife who knew. We didn't find a midwife who knew all about LGBTQ issues and had gone through cultural competency training to work with genderqueer patients and, you know, had read all the books and all the theory and had all the vocabulary. We just found somebody who wanted to know. We found somebody who said, I've never done this before. I've never had a genderqueer client. I want to support your family the best way that I can. Please let me know if you need me to do things differently. She asked us questions. She learned about our family. She paid attention. And that is the most important thing that I think anybody can bring to conversations with people who have different backgrounds, different experiences, is just be willing to ask the questions and then listen to the answers.
Well, let me ask you something, Lindsay, because you've taken on the role of an instructor, of a teacher, of a mentor, and from the sounds of it, been successful at it. But is you've probably learned as much or more as anybody that you've ever talked to during the course of this. So in the years that you've been doing this, going all the way back to when you were writing your column, mm-hmm. what have you learned?
I have learned to really think about my own assumptions about relationships. I think there's only so much advice that you can give other people before you start thinking, how does this apply to my own life? And one of the things that I have said to other people so much that I'm now maybe kind of starting to internalize it is that you can't control other people's behavior. A lot of the questions that I get, and frankly, I think a lot of the questions that any advice columnist gets, because I read other advice columns obsessively, of course, is, you know, this person in my life who I care about is treating me in a way that I don't like. How do I get them to stop doing that? And unfortunately, the answer is almost always you can't. You can't change someone else's behavior. All you can do is decide whether you're willing to be treated that way or not. And if not, how to establish boundaries. I think that's something that is so hard for so many of us to learn. And that kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier about how relationships, whether romantic or not, are mythologized. And we assume that if somebody loves you and cares about you, you will never have to set a boundary with them because they'll just automatically know what you need and what is unhelpful to you. And you can't really approach your real life relationships that way, or you can, but you'll end up in a mess because you won't have boundaries with anybody and people will be walking all over you and you'll be extremely unhappy because you're not communicating your needs. So that is something that I have said to people a lot. You have to be willing to walk away if you tell someone what you need and they can't give it to you. And that is something that I have really only much more recently started to think about actually putting that to work in, you know, my own life and my own friendships. And it's much easier to give other people advice than it is to take it yourself, for sure.
Well, I can see, Carolyn, about, you know, why the students would be receptive to, you know, hearing this message and enjoying, you know, having a chance to talk to Lindsay and ask questions. What feedback have you heard so far just on their experience?
The students are incredibly grateful for the chance to read this work. I was sharing with Lindsay this morning that the class, the literature class of mine that read her chapter on breaking up, had a really incredible conversation about it. And many of these students expressed that this is the first time they'd really read any text, especially in a class, about you know, thinking in depth about when a relationship is unhealthy. And, you know, one student even shared, maybe I would have seen the signs sooner in an abusive relationship if I'd ever thought about this. And so to have the chance to, like, as a class, really, really affirm these, you know, in many ways, such common sense type ideas that Lindsay has, like, don't stay with someone who makes you feel insufficient, who makes you feel not enough. You know, I think this is one of the hallmarks of good advice. Once you read it, you go, oh, of course. But for many students to hear that kind of standard about well-being and made explicit was incredibly powerful.
In just the short time that we've been sitting here talking, Lindsay, and just thinking about the title of your book and your column, they ask a queer chick. And of course, when, you know, we start something like this, I think, okay, well, this is, you know, and I even meant a comment about, well, this would be for, you know, people with, mm-hmm. Who are homosexual or, again, I'm losing words. Mm-hmm. Okay. But say they're non cisgender, non and heterosexual, that maybe mm-hmm. they wouldn't have anything to understand or to gain from this. And mm-hmm. you corrected me, you know, quite early, and I appreciated that. And now as we're sitting here talking, and I think just about the title about Ask a Queer Chick, and mm-hmm. I think, well, who's likely to have also a ton of questions? And it's people who are not queer, mm-hmm. you know, in wanting to learn. And you probably get a lot of questions from them who say, just as Carolyn, you know, had brought up about how to interact, mm-hmm. how to understand it. If I'm involved in a breakup, mm-hmm. well, I have quite a few people who know exactly what I'm going through that mm-hmm. I can turn, you know, I could find other, you know, other men here who've broken up with women before, uh-huh. or women have broken up with mm-hmm. them. Happens a lot.
Yeah.
And so I have quite a few resources. Mm-hmm. But for somebody that, you know, is in a same-sex relationship, mm-hmm. and they're going through something like that, they may not have the same kind of resource. They can't really just, they don't have the opportunity to turn and find a common ground or, mm-hmm. you know, common source to be able to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And that is definitely something that we see, especially in people who come from families who aren't affirming to their LGBTQ members. People can definitely end up in bad relationships for longer than they would like because they don't have other sources of support. They don't have other places to go, other people to turn to. And I think that's something that we're seeing change more and more. There are more resources available. People are more more willing to talk about it. And also, I just think the internet makes everything so... I know we all have our opinions about social media, and in some ways it's the bane of existence, but it also is so incredibly useful to LGBTQ people who might be isolated, who might come from families who don't support them, or who might not even feel safe being out in their daily lives, but who can reach out online with some measure of safety and anonymity and say, hey, I'm in a bad relationship. I don't know who to talk to because nobody knows I'm gay, but are there any resources that I could turn to for help? You know, and the availability of those things is so much more widespread now because we have all the social media and the online stuff. And I think that has been just an enormous positive for LGBTQ people.
I know that I personally have seen quite a shift when we're talking about culture and, you know, especially in pop culture, movies, mm-hmm. music, to where there's more acceptance and more of a reflection of the gay community in, mm-hmm. you know, what we listen to and what we watch. I'm old enough to remember the controversy of Brokeback Mountain.
Uh-huh.
You know, oh my gosh! You know, oh no!
Right.
You know, now you can't watch HBO, and you're going to get a diverse, you know, presentation of relationships. And so it's, and even in music too, because I played a lot of the pop music, uh-huh. and I think of, you know, Halsey and some of the other artists that mm-hmm. they're pretty open in singing about their, you know, Demi Lovato and other, mm-hmm. you know, that they sing about their relationships.
I was in the airport yesterday on my way here, and I stopped walking on my way past, I don't know, like a Starbucks, and I was like, I recognize that song. I was in Chicago O'Hare Airport, and they were playing a King Princess song called 1950, which is very openly and explicitly a love song by a woman to another woman. And, you know, it's not like a huge thing. It's not necessarily world-changing in and of itself, but standing there in the airport, and they're playing this openly gay love song as background music, that was kind of... I got really excited about that. I thought that was so, so beautiful that it's just kind of happening, you know, like it's just any other song and we can just listen to it.
One thing I encourage people to do if they want to help, you know, expand their own boundaries and to understand and to make new friends, the community events that take place that are... or LGBTQ organized or Kiwanis Pride put on, hosted by them. You don't have to be gay or transgender to go to one of these events. The public is invited. We hope that when you arrive, you're coming with the right mindset and you're open to making new friends. And you'll probably find, you know, some really helpful people like yourself, Lindsay, who would be willing to talk, especially if you're coming from the position of, you know, you want to reach out because, mm-hmm. you know, you know, you don't want to be the you don't want to do the opposite, and that's, you know, isolate the community. Mm-hmm. You know, we want we'll all to, you know, coexist and have a great time together. Mm-hmm. I'm talking too much. Your book sounds wonderful. Ask a Queer Chick. Where is it? Go ahead.
And if people have questions and don't know where to turn for information, I still take advice questions and I still write a column every month. So my email is askaqueerchick, askaqueerchick @gmail.com.
And thank you for coming to the Copper Country. Where are you normally from?
I'm from Denver.
From Denver. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So yeah, definitely mountains.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Carolyn, people want to know more about Campus Read. Well, how can they do that? Is it only for Finlandia students and faculty?
No, the community is always welcome to the main Campus Read event that happens in the evening. So probably next fall semester, there'll be, you know, the PR engine will churn up. You'll see on Facebook, if you follow Finlandia on Facebook or else on the Campus Read website, within the Finlandia University website, you'll see information about who we're bringing next.
All right. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.